Over the past year or so, I have significantly increased the portion of my media diet that I consume from sources that come from Britain. It would surprise none of you, I think, to know that I am something of an Anglophile. And maybe it has to do with the fact that I would maybe rather not listen to the news from here. But over the last year, a larger and larger share of my media diet has come from your homeland. And this means that I have learned a lot more about things that interest me and a lot more about things that do not interest me, like soccer. One of the things I have learned about soccer is that even though what all those teams in the UK play is soccer, they are called football clubs. And if you look at their websites, you will always see somewhere the abbreviation FC. Some of them are AFCs, which means that they are associated football clubs. And I'm not sure what it says about all the others, that a few of them are called athletic football clubs. But some of the most important and best known and wealthiest ones of all, have a very different distinction. Alistair, what are they called? United football clubs. Probably just about the best known soccer team on the planet is the Manchester United Football Club. Now, because of the way my head works, I started to get interested in why some teams are called United and most aren't. And it turns out that each of those teams has a story about starting out, usually in the late 19th or early 20th century, in a relatively larger city with a few teams scrambling to make fans and supporters and raise money, and then just about going bankrupt because there were too many of them, and somehow putting the little pieces back together by joining forces and creating a single united entity, a United Football Club that would be stronger and healthier and attract more supporters. And this model came to be so significant that in this country, which has virtually no history of soccer whatsoever, some brand new teams started to brand themselves as United, DC United, Minnesota United. I guess they just sort of like the example of the other teams that had named themselves that way. So, if you pay any attention to sports journalism in the UK, you know that UFC means one and only one thing, a United Football Club. It is a way of joining forces to do better at gathering supporters for a specific and passionate task. Now that is a long introduction to a short idea. We too are a UFC, but we are a different kind of UFC, or at least we are supposed to be. The Christian faith is made up of a few deceivingly simple ideas. We are all fundamentally and radically equal before God, no matter what our status is in this life, because we all live under the condition of human moral frailty. God acts in history to rescue us from the worst outcomes of that frailty, first by giving us rules, then by giving us teachers, and finally by coming to live directly among us and to set a profound act of love between God's judgment and our failures. No differences we make between ourselves, no difference of wealth or power or race or language or tribe or creed or anything else, can change two fundamental facts. We are all equal in depending on God to save us from the worst of ourselves, and we are all equal in our propensity to get off the rails when we forget about that dependence. Simple ideas, but they are incredibly hard to live by. And because they are so hard to live by, we fall into disagreements about what they mean and how we should live them out. And so, from the very beginning of its history, going all the way back to this letter to the Corinthians, the Christian church has been a pretty broken and divided affair. Now, because we all search for some connection to spiritual meaning, that desire of ours can get turned into the material for building structures of power, Structures that presume to hand out certified good housekeeping seal of approval forms of Christianity. And some folks get large rewards by claiming to be the masters of those structures of power, the ones who claim to speak for the Christian view on something. But of course, those are all built on a false premise, because all of them, like all of us, are all too likely to fall into error, and not least the sin of pride. If you listed out the values that lie at the core of those simple ideas at the heart of Christianity, you come up with things like generosity, forbearance, community, charity, equality. And if you go back and read or listen to all of the words that were said in our nation's capital on Friday, you will find that those values did not really get too much attention. It would be fair to say that they were not just not mentioned, they were mocked. We are fools if we believe in these things. We are fools to follow a God who reminds us that our fundamental equality is always more important, not just in the next world, but in this one. We are fools to believe that we best serve our own interests by serving others. We are fools to believe that our own well-being depends on much, much more than ourselves alone. That we are not the unchallenged masters of our own destiny, but that our destiny is caught up with the well-being and welfare of others. We are fools to believe that. And that is what we believe. That is what our faith teaches. And so more and more, friends, we are going to be regarded as fools. The wisdom of the cross, the idea that God's grace is not just a decoration of our lives, but a necessary condition of our lives together, that wisdom is seen as ridiculous or disgusting or sad by and through the lens of our culture. Not just one man, but our whole society. So if we are going to stick with what we believe, with what we know to be true, then we are going to have to stick together. It is going to be all the more important that we support each other, show up for each other, live out the paradox of the foolishness that reveals the wisdom God has shared with us. We are going to have to be a United Fools Church, the St. John's UFC. We will learn from those other UFCs that you get farther and gain more supporters when you join forces, when you work together. For Christians to be fools is no criticism. What is criticism is when people find us to be afraid. Afraid of change. Afraid of generosity, afraid of any other human beings made in the image and likeness of God. It is easy to fall into that trap of fear. And that is why Paul's instruction to be united isn't just good advice, it is the key to our future. To stave off the fear, to be fools bravely, we will need to be united. We need each other to do our collective work of sharing the wisdom of the cross with a foolish and fearful world. I started in Britain, and so I will end in Britain. Practically in the middle of England, in the region of Leicestershire, there is a church that has the remarkable distinction of having been built in 1653. That might not strike you as unusual unless you reflect that 1653 happened to be the middle of a civil war in England. The king had been executed by a populist uprising led by a humorless, self-involved leader named Oliver Cromwell. Cromwell was a man with a long list of things that he hated, but near the top of that list was the Church of England. Even after all of the wars and all of the bloodshed between Catholics and Protestants from a century before, the days of Cromwell were some of the darkest and most trying times the church had ever known. A wealthy young man named Robert Shirley decided that the best thing he could do to help the people of his village in those dark days was to build a church. And so in the village of Staunton Harold, he did just that. He paid to build a beautiful little village church, one of the only churches built in England during that dark and awful time. A Church of England church, which earned him the ire of Mr. Cromwell, who thought he should have spent the money instead on buying a ship for the Navy. And so he threw young Robert Shirley into jail. Shirley never saw the completion of his church because the building was stopped, and he died in prison at the age of 27. That was in 1656. 3 years later, Cromwell had died, the Civil War had ended, the monarchy had been restored, and the church was no longer suppressed. And Robert Shirley's son saw to it that that church his father had begun was finished, and it still stands today. And if you go and visit it, you will find over the door, as you go in, a tablet on which you will see these words. In the year 1653, when all things sacred were throughout the nation either demolished or profaned, Sir Robert Shirley founded this church, whose singular praise it is to have done the best things in the worst time, and to have hoped them in the most calamitous. The righteous shall be had in everlasting remembrance. That is the sort of fool we are called to be. Let us stick together, and then we can be. Amen.